This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
According to Billy Joel, for the next two or three days, yep, every time he passed wind, somebody said, "Did you clean the furniture?" Hey!
And Chad P.
You don't know that guy that's sitting in front of Walmart begging for change. That could be Paul Simon, for all you know, suffering from a mental illness. Well,
class is in.
This is Rock School and the Rock School Radio Network. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the Communication Department, Southeastern Louisiana University. Sitting to my immediate left, once again in our brand new, spanking new, you can still smell the paint on the walls radio studio. What's your name, kid?
Chad P.
Now, Chad came and watched me last semester give a lecture in front of the entire college here at on the university. Our university is broken into colleges. I gave a lecture on insanity,
yeah,
in rock and roll.
Yeah.
And immediately after it, you came up and said, "That's a Rock School show."
Oh, easily. It's a show.
Yeah, you should turn that into a Rock School show. So after last week, where all I did was vent and complain and yeah, scream and yell, and by the way, I've gotten a lot of people that have come up and said, "I really like that. You should do more of that."
Oh, yeah. You know, when you first come out with it, yeah, all of a sudden everyone will, "I've been thinking the exact same thing."
It just took you to say it.
Exactly.
We're all thinking it. You just said it.
Right.
I've decided to go the opposite way today. And talk
things
about
that make us feel good.
Well, no, I want to do basically that same insanity lecture, mm-hmm, today. So I'll just warn you up front: there'll be a lot more talking, a lot more discussion in this show, a little less music, because this originally was a lecture, originally an hour long lecture. And here's the basic concept: I was asked to talk on the concept of insanity.
Yeah, madness.
Madness. Mm-hmm. That was the overriding concept. So what I did was I looked into the world of rock and roll and said, are there any people in the world of rock and roll that actually, and I don't mean Ozzy Osbourne pseudo-insane, mm-hmm, and no M&Ms back, you know, brown M&Ms backstage like Van Halen. Are there people that are truthfully,
certifiably insane?
Mad.
Yeah.
Right.
And I believe you found a lot of them.
Yeah, sad enough there are. We'll begin with a gentleman by the name of Jim Gordon. Do you know the name?
Well, Jim Gordon. Do from the lecture.
You do. Okay. He's a drummer.
Yeah.
Jim Gordon started as a drummer for the Everly Brothers at age 17. And then, if you know Mason Williams' song Classical Gas, mm-hmm, he was the drummer on that. That got him more session work and made him known to the Beach Boys. He began doing work for Pet Sounds, all the drum work on Pet Sounds done by Jim Gordon. Mm-hmm. He was also the drummer on Good Vibrations.
Yep.
This exploded him. He started to do work for George Harrison, Carly Simon, Alice Cooper, Donovan, Dr. John, Tom Petty, Zappa.
All within a short period of time, I do believe.
Very short. So in the mid-1970s, if you heard drumming, there was a pretty good shot it was being done by Jim Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
He started doing work as part of Bonnie and Delaney when Eric Clapton was in the band. Well, when Eric Clapton no longer wanted to be part of this jam band called Bonnie and Delaney, mm-hmm, he grabbed the rhythm section and said, "Why don't we form our own band?" That band became Derek and the Dominoes.
Cool.
So when you listen to Layla and Assorted Love Songs, the album, all the drum work is being done by Jim Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, that beautiful piano piece at the end of Layla, mm-hmm, that's known as the coda,
mm-hmm,
is also being played by Jim Gordon.
All right. Now let me ask you this.
We know who he is.
Up until this point, sounds like guy living a very successful career, good life.
But
what happened?
He's hearing voices in his head.
Uh-huh.
He is bipolar, schizophrenic, and he's going to doctors. And he's saying, I'm hearing these voices in my head. What's the problem? The problem is that the doctors don't recognize a mental illness. Gordon is known as an alcoholic, so they are treating him for alcoholism.
Okay.
The voices slowly but surely begin to coalesce into a single voice. The single voice sounds like his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And when the voices begin to sound like his mother, slowly but surely, they turn evil. And in 1983, the voices say, kill me, as in kill your mother.
Yeah.
He does. June 3rd, 1983, he attacks his mother with a claw hammer. And when that doesn't do the job, he uses a butcher knife.
Wow.
Three stabs later, his mother is dead. Right now, Jim Gordon is serving 16 years to life in Vacaville, California. Now, there's a lot of little rumors flying around that he killed himself in prison, he was murdered in prison, he died of some disease in prison. None of them are true.
He's alive.
He's alive. And there's actually a petition out there to get him freed in order to get him the help that he deserves for his mental illness.
He's still suffering from it?
As far as we know, he's in prison and not getting the drugs that would help him.
Wow.
He is still walking around in a poor mental state.
Mm.
And that's our first person on Rock School today. Here is Jim Gordon and Layla, Derek and the Dominoes. Rock School. School, Jim Gordon playing the keyboard and the drums there with Derek and the Dominoes.
So I'm assuming whenever he was playing his instrument that he was on the good side of the bipolar or schizophrenia.
But still hearing voices.
Wow.
Sure. Let's move on to the next person. Most people can pull this name out as a person who suffered from... Insanity's not the right word. It really isn't. Sid Barrett from Pink Floyd.
Oh, he was just delusional, huh?
Yeah, he was. Let me tell you the story of Sid Barrett. He was a founding member of Pink Floyd in 1965, but not one of the original members of Pink Floyd.
Okay.
Pink Floyd actually existed before they were Pink Floyd. They were called the T-Sets.
Mm-hmm.
It was Barrett that actually named them Pink Floyd after he was looking at the liner notes of a blues compilation. He saw two blues artists' names, Pink Anderson and Floyd Council, used the two names and put it together.
Yep.
He also wrote a lot of the first big hits that got them, Pink Floyd, their first notoriety through the UK, at least. See Emily Play was their first big hit, and that's probably what we're going to play here. Now, you start to run into the question of madness and drugs with Sid Barrett. Does overt drug use produce insanity, or does overt drug use simply exacerbate the insanity that was already there? It depends on who you talk to. It either screws up the dopamine, the serotonin in the brain, and creates insanity, or a lot of people say, no, that's not true. The insanity has to be there, and it exacerbates it.
Well, I wouldn't argue with you if you said that the person was already certifiably insane or had a touch of insanity, and they were a heavy...
It.
Of course, yeah. I mean, that just seems to be common sense.
Well, I guess, but so many things are counterintuitive when you're dealing with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't the body where you cut and it heals. I mean, we're dealing with the mind.
Yeah.
Well, as you can probably, you know, expect, Sid Barrett got heavily, heavily into LSD in 1967 and began to sort of disassociate himself with the group even while he was in Pink Floyd. Floyd would begin to play their concert and Barrett would come out on stage and would, for an hour while the group is running through their hits, simply stand there and detune the E string on his guitar. Just don, 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 bring it back up. Now, this was the swinging 60s and a lot of people just believed, like, this is what he was supposed to do.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was a happening. I'm supposed to see this. There were rumors that Syd Barrett would put LSD into his headband. Not true. There were rumors that he would put water into, you know, LSD into his water and then pour it on his head, and that's how he took it. Not true. Hmm. Why? He just put the tab in his mouth.
Yeah.
You know, none of this is true. This was also rumors that were given over to Jimi Hendrix. Oh, he put it into his headband. No. Why? Mm-hmm. Just put it into your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knew you took it anyway. Just put it on a sugar tab and pop it right into your mouth. David Gilmour was a guitarist that the remaining members of the group of Pink Floyd knew, and he was asked to join the group in late 1967, early 1968. And it's not like they asked Syd Barrett to leave. They would just sort of forget to pick him up for gigs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just that he wasn't also kicked out. He just sort of slowly left on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1968, started working on solo albums.
Mm-hmm.
Put out two of them. The one you might know is The Madcap Laughs, and you can hear it. There's some insanity inside of that. But after the two solo albums, he left the world. And there's no other way to put it. He allowed his demons to take over and took off back to the Cambridge countryside and lived out the remainder of his life in his mother's garage apartment.
Wow.
He painted and gardened for the rest of his life and literally became so delusional, he had no idea that this thing he created, this Pink Floyd, even existed.
Right.
At 60 years old, he died of complications from diabetes. Some people state he died of pancreatic cancer, but probably not. His mental state was so bad that often people would go and get him and bring him into the studio while Pink Floyd was recording, I mean, major albums like Wish You Were Here,
yeah,
and The Wall.
And he had no idea.
Nothing. The band members would look over in the corner, who's that guy sitting over there? Oh, that's Syd.
That's Syd.
Really?
Wow.
You know, and none whatsoever. The band, however, understood how important Syd was,
sure,
to them, because songs like Shine On You Crazy Diamond, Wish You Were Here, Have a Cigar, they're all about and dedicated to Syd. So,
well, that's
good. Here's one from Syd Barrett. See Emily play. Rock School.
Emily tries but misunderstands. She's often inclined to borrow somebody's dreams till tomorrow.
There's Syd Barrett out in front of Pink Floyd. Sorry I'm talking a little bit more than usual. This was a lecture at one point in time.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a radio educational show, and I think that these stories are fascinating because unless you have dealt with a mental illness or know someone who has, you never really can fully grasp the concept of how serious a mental illness really is.
And how to deal with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we'll come back with a member of the Beach Boys in just a moment. Hello, KLSU out there in Baton Rouge. Thanks for listening to the radio show.
Hello, Radio Universidad up in Salamanca, Spain. That's in Europe, by the way. They're part of the Rock School Radio Network.
iTunes. That's worldwide. Back in a minute. Rock School. Okay, moving along. I have about 10 people. We're just not going to get to them all.
Mm-hmm.
I just know because of it. Brian Wilson,
yep,
of the Beach Boys. Now, you know what he looks like today.
I do.
Talks out of the side of his mouth a,
yep,
little bit. He's a bit overweight from what he's used to. Let me tell you about the story of Brian Wilson. At one point in time, Brian Wilson had an amazing amount of pressure on the guy. He was just the sole songwriter of the Beach Boys. He had just written Pet Sounds. He was following that up with Good Vibrations. He was the son of an amazingly horrible, mentally abusive father,
mm-hmm,
Joe Jackson on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to get into it here. It's well documented on the web and in books. I mean, awful, awful, awful man.
Mm-hmm.
No two ways about it. His first child, Carney, was just born. He's working on this new project called Dumb Angel. It was supposed to be retitled Smile, but it never came to fruition. He's working on a new format of recording called modular production, where you do it in little grouping and sections,
uh-huh,
you know? The problem is Columbia Records is saying to him, look, you've had two hits. Let's go. Pump out another album.
Mm.
He doesn't want to pump them out because of this new type of recording.
Mm-hmm.
But it costs a lot of money.
Right.
And he's giving these modules to Columbia. And Columbia is saying, this is terrible. And he's saying, but the songs aren't done. You don't get it. These are modules. You need all the modules together.
Right.
The Beach Boys go into a lawsuit with Columbia to get out of their own label. Songs are being turned down by Columbia. Things are just bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Wilson hears a tape of A Day in the Life from Sgt. Pepper's and Snaps, a full and complete nervous mental breakdown.
From a song?
From a song. Well, it was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Okay.
It just kludump. He spends close to 3 years in his bedroom taking copious amounts of cocaine, LSD, heroin, and just eating food as if there's no tomorrow. Balloons to 300 pounds, has two strokes. That's why he speaks out of the side of his mouth right now. And almost dies three times.
Wow.
Three times. He's diagnosed with schizophrenic disorder, bipolar type, which gives him voices in his head.
Mm-hmm.
The voices in his head tell him songs to write, and he writes them. And he submits them to the record company. And these are songs about squash and songs about celery and songs about his fingernails. And they're just, you know, insanity.
Right.
His appearance today, again, out of the side of the mouth, the shake that he has.
Mm-hmm.
The shake that he has is called tardive dyskinesia, which is an involuntary movement brought on by excessive use of antidepressant and antipsychosis drugs. At least this has a good ending.
Oh,
his album Pet Sounds in a UK survey, Britain, UK, was named the best album ever written.
Oh, wow.
He's been touring the UK playing just Pet Sounds.
Good for him.
His mental state is under control with drugs. He is playing again and singing. And if you'd like to see it, VH1 actually captured the concert, and he performs it very, very well.
Lord knows I'm no doctor. I can't diagnose a mental disorder. But from hearing you talk about this man, it sounds like the pressure really got to him, and he got overwhelmed really fast. I'm willing to make a bet that if those record reps at Columbia would have just backed off just a little bit, he may not have gotten as bad as he did.
And his father.
Well, that too. Right. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And wouldn't it have been nice, Beach Boys, Rock School. Okay, we have a short amount of time before the bottom of the hour, about 4 minutes, and I have a very short, quick one. Billy Joel.
Oh, I know this one.
From Do you really?
Yeah, from
what
the
What is it about?
It's about the lemon-scented furniture polish.
That's right.
From our Urban Legends show.
Billy Joel actually went in the 1970s, went into a mental institution for severe depression.
Yep.
Because he did not make it in the music industry when he wanted to, and he went nuts. He attempted to kill himself.
Wow.
Yes, he did. Here's the story from his own lips. This is how it went. It's funny, although...
Well, it is now.
But. Yeah, but you don't want it to be as funny as it actually is.
No.
Billy Joel stated, after coming out of the mental hospital, he decided to kill himself.
With what?
Went into his linen closet, looked up, saw a gallon bottle of Clorox bleach. Decided, I'm not going to drink that. That's going to taste bad. Turned to the right, saw two bottles of Lemon Pledge. Drank them both. The moment he drank them, he went, oh, my God, what have I done? And he jumped in his car and he went to the hospital. Lemon Pledge really isn't that bad for you. Syrup of Ipecac, it all came back up.
Uh-huh.
The problem is a good bit of it, you know, had started moving through his body.
Right.
According to Billy Joel, here comes the joke. According to Billy Joel, for the next 2 or 3 days, every time he passed wind, somebody said, did you clean the furniture? Hey, Rock School.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray.
You know, we laugh about that, but it's unfortunate. I wish a lot of these stories could end with kind of a small piece of humor, but unfortunately,
oh yeah, it's awful.
Few and far between.
It's awful. Meatloaf also went into a hospital for depression. I mean, a lot of people that you would think, because they're not getting what they want, they go into a severe depression.
Just goes to show you that, you know, material goods aren't everything. Fame, fortune, you look at the average Joe looks at these rock stars and says, what in the world do you have to be depressed about? You have everything.
Well, the thing is, you ever heard that term, you spend up to your limit, you spend up to your paycheck?
Yeah.
You know, well, what they have is a different level. And they want more than that level.
It's true.
Welcome to the bottom of the hour. I'm Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
And let's do something called 7 days and 70 seconds. This will be Monday, February 22nd through Sunday, February 28th. Chad has Monday. Go!
30 years ago, on February 22nd, the lead singer of AC/DC, Bon Scott, died from acute alcohol poisoning and death by misadventure. Pick one or the other. You can't do both.
Legally, they called it.
33 years old in London, England.
Yeah, legally, they called it death by misadventure. Mm. Oops. 10 years ago, Tuesday, February 23, more legal problems for Sean Combs, a.k.a. P. Diddy, a.k.a. Diddy, a.k.a. whatever, as prosecutors charge him with bribery of a witness involved in connection with an earlier charge of criminal possession of a weapon.
February 24th, 15 years ago, 1995, Melvin Franklin from The Temptations died of heart failure at age 52 in L.A. How come I'm getting all the obituaries?
I'm sorry.
Deal.
Thursday, February 25th, 20 years ago, at a Roy Orbison tribute in Los Angeles, Bob Dylan joins former Byrds member Roger McGuinn, Chris Hillman, and David Crosby for the first time on stage in 25 years.
All right, keeping up with my consistent news of death. On February 26th in 1990, Cornell Gunter from the Coasters, he was murdered in Las Vegas at age 53.
Sorry about that. Saturday, February 27th, 20 years ago, Rob Pilatus, lead singer and lip singer for Milli Vanilli, declares in a Time magazine interview that he is the new Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
His lips were moving.
Sunday, February 28th, 40 years ago, Jefferson Airplane is fined $1,000 for using profanity during a concert in Oklahoma City, and that is 7 days and 70 seconds. Let's talk about another person. You ever heard the term, this is the best band you've never heard of?
I have.
This is the best band you've never heard of.
Who is it?
13th Floor Elevators.
Never heard of them?
Nope. Rocky Erickson is the lead singer of the 13th Floor Elevators, and they are one decision away from being world famous.
Mm-hmm.
Janis Joplin was supposed to be their lead singer.
Wow.
And somebody said to her, no, it's all happening out in San Francisco. And she said, okay, I'll go to San Francisco.
Darn.
The band actually is known in the music world, but not so much to fans, because many in the 1960s psychedelic rock movement say the 13th Floor Elevators were the reason they went psychedelic. Their music was basically what moved them that way.
They did it to themselves?
Well, they had critical success, but not success in sales.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Well, in 1968, the lead singer, lead songwriter, Rocky Erickson, basically began to speak to no one who was there.
Okay.
Just began having conversations with no one.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come up, who are you speaking to? This guy right here. And there's no one there.
Imaginary friend.
Right. On stage, he would talk to people and, what are you doing? I'm talking to this guy. And there's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
Since the band's drug use was so widespread, police began basically following these guys. When they caught up with them, they busted Rocky for one joint, sentenced him for 10 years,
uh-huh.
Pleaded insanity, went to Austin State Hospital, where he promptly escaped. Dumb.
Oh.
By escaping, they sent him to Rusk State Hospital for the criminally insane, where he received, dig this, electroconvulsive shock therapy.
That's not fun.
And Thorazine. Turned him into a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed there till 1972, where he got out, and it seemed that he got a little bit better, actually started performing a little bit, and then he became obsessed with mail.
What?
Mail, as in letters in mailboxes.
Okay.
He began stealing them out of people's mailboxes because he was positive inside them was messages of hate and dismay, and he was saving people by taking their mail away.
You know what this sounds like?
What's
sounds
that?
Like that movie with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, exactly. A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
The charges were dropped. It got so bad that people actually charged him.
Mm-hmm.
The charges were dropped when he admitted he never actually opened the mail. Since then, his brother, Sumner, has gotten hold of him and has gotten him back on his music,
mm-hmm.
and he's performing again. His brother, Sumner, is, of all things, a classical tuba player. Of all the instruments to choose,
you know,
he's back, he's performing. So this one also has a good ending.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, a lot of their music has been redone and put into a tribute album with songs covered by groups like R.E.M., ZZ Top, and Primal Scream. Here is the 13th Floor Elevators and what they sound like, and you will admit they're great. Rock School.
You gotta wake up.
Now you're going to miss me, baby, when I'm gone. There you go, 13th floor elevators, Rocky Erickson out in front. Let's take our break early because we're talking longer in this one. Do you mind coming out just a little bit early? Because we want to come back. I want to talk about Peter Green and some of the things Peter Green did. So hello, WBSD Burlington, Wisconsin. Hope you're enjoying the show.
As KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana. But they always enjoy our shows.
That's true. Nice people up there. And, of course, iTunes. By all means, get us on iTunes. Back in 1 minute, as I said before, with Peter Green. Rock School. Okay, Peter Green of Fleetwood Mac. Now, everybody kind of knows Fleetwood Mac for the poppy stuff. You can go your own way. But in reality, they started as a blues-based band. You probably might also know Peter Green as the author of Black Magic Woman. Yeah, I know the song by Santana.
Yeah.
But Peter Green actually wrote it, and that's actually the song we're going to play. Let me tell you where Peter Green came in. Green was Clapton's replacement in John Mayall's Blues Breakers. Well, when they broke up, Peter Green got together with the bassist of John Mayall's Blues Breakers, who was John McVie, and the drummer, who was Mick Fleetwood.
Mm-hmm.
See the two people?
Yep.
They came out and named themselves Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. Ta-da!
There you go.
When they started putting out hits, Green began taking LSD. Now we get into the same fight as we did before. Did LSD bring on mental illness, or did it exacerbate what was there?
Mm-hmm.
He states he began seeing visions while he was on stage of angels holding starving children. And he believed himself to be, I don't know if it was a god, but a prophet, if you will, that was supposed to take care of this. So he began going on stage in long flowing robes. Lots of pictures of this. Long flowing robes, huge crucifixes around his neck. Yeah. And would go out while his guitar chords were being held and he didn't need his right hand, and he would bless the audience. He attempted to get his band members to sign contracts that would force them financially to take only what they needed to live, and the rest of the money would go to starving children and things like that.
So he became like almost a religious icon in his own eyes.
But it was his religion. It's not like he followed a technical religion, if you will. He says in Munich, Germany, he took a trip and never came back.
Where'd he go?
Just walked the streets for years. Finally, in the mid-70s, he was picked up and sent to a mental hospital. And again, electroconvulsive therapy, Thorazine, and seemed like things were getting better until 1977 when he was arrested for threatening and beating up his accountant. Know why?
Why?
He was giving him too much money.
Oh.
The money was supposed to be sent to charities to help starving children.
That's not mental illness. I threaten my accountant all the time.
1980, again, little resurgence, but in 1984, a relapse. And he went and he lived as a homeless man, a vagabond. I mean, on the streets.
Wow.
For 6 years until people grabbed him, picked him back up off the street, and he's now back on medication and is actually touring, playing the old songs of the original Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac.
Man, and some of the stories about these folks
is amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing.
It is. Here's one of the early hits. You know it. She's a Black Magic Woman. Rock School.
I got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind, I can't see.
You know what I'm taking from this show today and this lecture that you did a while back?
What's that?
Don't judge. Don't judge people. Don't judge a book by its cover.
Judge slowly.
Judge slowly, because you never know. You don't know that guy that's sitting in front of Walmart begging for change. That could be Paul Simon. For all you know, suffering from a mental illness.
Well, it wouldn't be Paul Simon, but I know what you're saying.
Okay.
That could have been somebody that at one point in time was doing great things.
Right.
Don't make a judgment against him.
And even if it's not, don't make a judgment.
True.
Really shouldn't.
True. How about Alanis Morissette?
We all know she's messed up.
Well, she's a little more than what you think.
Give me
the
official.
She's not just angry. I mean, that's what a lot of people said. Prove to me that she's not just angry. She's a little more than that.
Well, Dave Coulier will do that to you.
That's true. She actually has had lifelong depression. Now, when you think of lifelong depression, What do you think most people do when they have been diagnosed? I mean, there's a difference between feeling blue, mm-hmm. you know, oh gosh, I feel a little blue, it's cloudy outside, and depression. I mean, depression is all-encompassing. Wouldn't you go on some kind of medication?
I would probably need to.
Yeah, not her.
No?
She went on it one time, didn't like how it feels. So what she did was start something called interrogative coaching, and still does it today. What she does is talks through her depression.
Mm-hmm.
And she says it allows her, allows her to go into her depression and come back up through coaching. She takes the lows because the highs are so good. She's so productive in the highs. Now, that's only one thing that she's run into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's from Canada.
I do.
And when she came here to the United States to attempt to make it in the music industry,
mm-hmm.
she was told by everybody that she was too heavy.
What?
Alanis Morissette.
Huh?
You've seen her?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was too heavy. She was told by people in the business to not eat and immediately became anorexic and bulimic.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they are mental illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
She became anorexic and bulimic. Between the ages of 14 and 18, she said she became so good at not eating
mm-hmm.
that if she had a two-week span, she could bound her weight 25 pounds either way.
Oh.
Yeah. She's now say she's beaten that and is in uber health, great shape, and actually runs marathons. But she won't allow drugs to defeat the depression. So she is clinically depressed, allowing herself to go into the depression and come out of it because she can interrogatively coach herself out of it. But she says she allows the lows because the highs are so productive.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Alanis Morissette, you ought to know. Rock School.
I know the version of me. Is she perverted like me? Would she go not like you?
Okay, last break as we do the Insanity Show here on Rock School. There's many, many people I didn't get to. Kurt Cobain, because of depression, died, killed himself, obviously. Peter Gabriel, Meatloaf, just hundreds of people. Lou Reed was given electroconvulsive therapy by his parents because they thought it would cure homosexuality.
Ooh.
I mean, all kinds of stuff. I'm going to finish on a name you might not know. Gigi Allen.
Don't know.
Ever heard of him?
Nope.
He's a punk rocker. I'm going to clean this up as much as I possibly can.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. Gigi Allen was a punk rocker, and he had a band called the Murder Junkies.
Mm-hmm.
Gigi Allen, and understand, I can only say a little bit of what Gigi Allen did.
Okay.
Gigi Allen was a punk rocker who would, on stage, cut himself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a show. No, it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Gigi Allen would cut himself on the top of the head and allow the blood to cover himself as much as he possibly could. I mean, literally.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he would keep cutting the same wound every night after night after night because it would bleed more and more in the top of the scalp. He was bald.
Okay.
And it was got so bad sometimes, so bad in the infection, they had to stop the shows mm-hmm. and he had to go to the hospital. He would also, and I'm going to try to say this as delicately as possible, the days of his shows, he would take laxatives all day long so he could, on stage.
Wow.
Got it?
Okay.
Okay. He was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder during a 1989 rape and torture trial of a woman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, pled it down to felony assault and only did 2 years. When he came out, he skipped parole and went on tour. I'm making finger quotes.
A tour.
Underground tour. Here's why people were trying to find him. Because during this tour, he stated that he was going to end his life. He was going to commit suicide
mm-hmm.
on stage.
Uh-huh.
That was going to be his finale. Thing about it is, he didn't succeed because he dies of a heroin overdose the night of a documentary premiere. Somebody made a documentary about this final tour,
uh-huh.
and before he could actually kill himself, the documentary's premiere in Manhattan occurs, and he dies of a heroin overdose. And as per his wishes, Gigi Allen, his body was not embalmed, but rather allowed to bloat for 3 days
what?
In an open casket, and he is buried, shown, you know, for 3 days, in a black leather jacket and jock strap while 1950s country music plays.
What?
There
you
go.
Are you serious?
We'll finish with one from Gigi Allen.
Wow, you saved the best for last,
yep.
Huh?
This is Don't Talk to Me. My name is Joe Burns.
My name's Chad P.
Yeah. Look all this stuff up. It's more than what I told you. We'll be back next week with a much more fun show. Class is dismissed.
Well, aren't you sick and tired of talking on the phone? Sitting in your room, conversing all alone. Talk, 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 talking about everybody else. But what you'd really rather do is talk about yourself.